Spring turkey season is upon us, and don't be caught out in the woods without having Onyx Hunt on your phone. One feature Onyx has that is often overlooked for turkey hunting is their recent imagery filter with their elite memberships. This imagery is updated week to week, and it comes in extremely handy, especially when you're trying to find these gobble zones where these turkeys will go out in a high spot on a fresh clear cut and strut around all day long. Actually, I was just looking at it on Onyx where the timber company just came into Andrew's Club and did a very small clear cut along this creek. And I can see the high spots on the topographical map, but also I can see exactly where they mulch. And those are going to be hot spots for finding gobblers, especially mid-morning after they get off their hens, getting up on these little high spots in this fresh, small clear cut along the creek and strutting and gobbling all day long. If you want to give Onyx a try, you can actually download it for free, try it for 7 days. And if you decide to purchase, you can use the promo code Southern and save on your premium and elite memberships. So going into this turkey season, know where you stand with Onyx.
Look, y'all know we harp on it a lot. You need a good pair of binos. Yeah, I never hunted with binos until I was almost into my 20s. I never did it when I was a teenager or anything like that, or when I was a kid, we never had binos. And when I bought my first pair of Vortex binos, the first binos I ever purchased back in like 2015, it immediately made a huge difference for me, especially in the turkey woods. So give yourself the advantage of a good pair of binos this spring, whether you're looking for more of like an entry-level bino like the Vortex Diamondbacks or something really, really nice like the Razors. Vortex is going to have something for you. And hey, don't pay full price for it. Use our discount code at eurooptic.com. Use the code SGN10 to get a discount on any Vortex optics that you want to order. Again, that's eurooptic.com, code SGN10 to go get a discount on any Vortex product you order. If you live in the Gulf Coast region, you need to find yourself at the EcoWild Expo May 10th through the 12th in Mobile. It is the premier outdoor expo for the Gulf Coast region, and we're going to be there. We're going to have a booth. We're super excited about it. Can't wait to meet you guys that live down there. We absolutely love the Gulf Coast region, so to be a part of this show, we're super excited about. We're going to have past podcast guests there at our booth for you to talk to, guys who are relevant for your area, who you can talk to, you can pick their brain, you can joke with them, laugh with them, tell them your story, whatever you want to do. It's going to be an awesome time. We're already working on some past podcast guests, but hey, if you live in this area and you have a suggestion for someone you want to see at that show, write in and we'll see if we can get them. There's going to be all kinds of exhibitors at the show that are focused on hunting, fishing, conservation, and recreation. There's going to be activities for the whole family there. They got axe throwing, archery. They're going to have our podcast booth. And then for the kids, they got touch tanks, a honeybee exhibition, a raptor show, kids fishing tank, BB gun range, and a butterfly house. So you're going to love it. Your kids are going to love it. It's going to be an awesome time. So head on over to ecowildexpo.com to get more information on the show and to go ahead and grab your tickets. And hey, mark it on your calendar. May 10th through the 12th. Be there. We want to see you and we're excited to talk to you. So we'll see you at the EcoWild Expo this May 10th through the 12th at the Mobile Convention Center in Mobile, Alabama.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
How's it going, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of the Southern Outdoorsman Podcast. You might want to go check this one on YouTube. We've got a pretty cool little campsite we got set up here for the viewers on YouTube. But I am joined by Michael Perry, the infamous Michael Pike. The Dilla is back, baby.
The Dilla is back.
And then we got Shane Parker here as well. What's going on, guys?
Doing good.
Sweating it out. Yeah. Enjoying it. Glad to see that Diller figured out you can't, Almadilla cannot live in the west and north. So, you starve to death out there or what?
No, I ate plenty of ramen.
Plenty of ramen?
I got it down to a science.
Did you?
Yeah.
Yeah, he got a couple noodles dialed in. Listen now, I got the jet bowl.
Raymond, you couldn't find something else?
Not in my budget.
Made it stretch. By the way, how long were you gone out west?
I don't know.
Did you
really
leave in July?
To be honest, July 10th, and I came back last week.
So it's a September. God, what is it?
The 20th? I guess it was September.
This was a week 25th? And a half ago.
Yeah.
It is. Yeah. A little over 2 months.
Yeah. Holy crap.
Yeah.
Well, glad to have you back. And listen, now Michael's all back fired about whitetail, so we're going to do another
Straight
episode.
Straight back into hunting and tearing the woods up.
Yeah.
Turning well, over
you get
every
put in jail
rock.
Or something out there, and you finally get over here, you just run wild.
Did I have you fooled when I said, wait, tomorrow hunting season opens? You remember that?
No, I said, I told you, he's probably messing with it. Yeah. Some other cats be jumping on it.
So. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I had them.
Yeah, well, this is kind of interesting. So we're up here in camp hunting this bow opener for part of Alabama, and a pretty interesting part of the state. Probably some Alabama listeners could probably guess, you know, general region of probably where we're at. But I want to kind of talk about just kind of what's been going on with everybody, specifically kind of this early season hunting. So Shane, we just got back from our Georgia trip not very long ago, about maybe a week and a half, 2 weeks ago, where we getting kind of dabble our toes, dip our toes in some early season hunting with still in that situation in Georgia, still a lot of the deer, a lot of the bucks were still in velvet. There's some of the mature bucks were out of velvet, but some of the, a lot of the younger bucks are still in velvet, which made it kind of interesting for finding sign. Now where we're at, it's not the case. Everything's hard horned, it seems like, and they're leaving an absolute ton of sign.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, Shane, I got to ask, you recently moved to a different part of the state, which is kind of like up here where we're at. What has been your transition from where you typically have been hunting for the last, say, 25 years to now shifting over here to this part of the state?
That's a big difference. I mean, big. Just terrain-wise, a huge difference. And just the amount of sign that's up here is a big difference as far as the time of year, too.
Mm-hmm.
That's a big difference.
Well, talk about that real quick, because you brought this up last night when we were sitting around the campfire talking about the difference between sign here versus sign where you typically hunt and how many, like, weeks or months ahead it is here compared to, like, what you're traditionally used to.
Yeah, yeah. It's 2 weeks ahead here at least for what I would normally see there. And the funny thing is the ruts line up with each other, but it's just the sign. It's like these bucks are just, higher testosterone level up here. Clearly, and it shows in the amount of sign and the earliness of the sign. This is the amount of sign that I would see in late October there. You know, so it's a big difference.
Yeah, it's I'll tell you one eye-opening thing. I did a little scout trip this morning after hunting last night, and the amount of scrapes I found, big scrapes, wide open, like not just like a little pollen, but like huge scrapes, blew my mind. I'm like, it's October 1st now, and it's unbelievable, which gets me over to old Perry here, Mr. Perry. Now, listen, let me ask you this. You've been bow hunting up here and hunting up here for a long time. Is this typical, like, sign, or is there something special about this year compared to, like, years past, as in when it comes to the buck sign?
At times, it's exactly like this. It's, I don't know what it is for, you know, the bucks have been managed a little bit better and there's more competition and they're just putting it out. But, you know, last year, because of lack of food, I don't think they've done it. And now they're just ready to go. So it's amazing. But, yeah at times it's before October they'll be tearing up, rubbing and scraping. So, you know, and they've done them studies where their ruts, you know, breeding cycle like November 13th. So it's getting fired up. And it's amazing. The acorns are falling like crazy in places. So, you know, a total turnaround from last year, but yeah, the sign, if you get in the right place, the sign will be tearing it up. So.
And that brings over to a conversation me and Michael had, or me and Pike had,
the dealer.
last night about sign in regards to mass crops. And Michael, I'm going to pitch it over to you, but before we do, a guy we just interviewed last week or so, Stuart Keene from Georgia, he talked about like those really heavy mass years, you always seem to find more buck sign than the years when it's a lot less mass crop. And, you know, his thought process was, you know, when there's less mass crop, unless you're in that little pocket of whatever the food source there is, you're not really going to find buck sign outside. But when all the deer are spread out, like all the bucks are laying down sign and kind of making their territory known. But, Pike, what's your take on that?
Yeah, I have to agree with that, because last year I don't think the scrapes really started popping up until first or second week of November. I mean, it was late last year when I started running into a bunch of scrapes. But 2 years ago, it was very similar to this year when the white oaks were dropping. It's like they were laying down sign early.
Shane, what's your thoughts on that?
I mean, I think it's just the amount of – I think there's less stress. That's what I think. I think they sense there's more that hard mast on the ground, and it just puts their mind at ease. They're back to, like, I ain't got to search for food. I can do what I'm supposed to do, you know.
I ain't never thought about that, but, yeah, it makes sense.
Yeah, it's just one less stressor that's in the equation. If it's really dry drought like we had last year where I'm coming from, we had that drought all through September, late August. It put such a stressor on the deer that we didn't see any sign at all. It was like not until we got rain did we see any, you know, fresh sign. It's just that stressor was relieved, and I think that's exactly what's happening here is that hard mass just takes that stressor off those deer, and they're just back to being their normal self, you know.
Yeah, it was similar last year with a drought. We had a drought, you know, toward late summer, and then when hunting season came, a lot of people didn't get figured out to adjust, but the sign moved down because it was moisture was down lower, so everything had burned up on tops. So you had to kind of look for that, so make an adjustment.
Yeah, that's something interesting about where we're at. It's like the vastness of terrain topography. You know, you could have flat ridge tops, and you could have giant hollers. You can have, you know, big bluffs, mountain laurel, you know, high stem count sapling thickets and greenbrier and everything in between. Mm-hmm. And, like, that's one thing I want to kind of get over is, like, now the application of what everybody's doing here in Alabama, at least us four, and specifically y'all three, one thing I'm interested in is, you know, Perry, this time of the year, you know, what would it have to be for you to feel confident going in thinking that there's a mature buck using an area? Like, what would you have to see that you think there would be an opportunity for you to be able to get a bow opportunity, you know, at a mature buck?
Well, that sign, like y'all seeing the fresh, big sign, but, everybody knows me by now as I'd like historical stuff, a year before information, so that's what we're going by off is what was happening last year or last couple of years with specific deer. You know, I don't want to get too much detail, but I'm getting older, I got more of a plan of how what I want to do, and I'm not a feed tree guy or anything like that, so just historical stuff and you know, the bedding stuff more and trying to catch them coming out where they're being safe at and accessing food. So that's what I'm looking for. As far as the paying attention to that big sign that much, I've seen a little bit of it, but I'm trying to stay out of it right now. So I've just got a couple areas that we're keying in until we get ready for the pre-rut and stuff. So.
And just kind of focusing on just travel patterns right now, in between bedding and potential, food sources.
Pretty tight. Me and Kathy, we're hunting together, and so we're kind of got like a twofold different little strategy. And we're keying, like I said, we've got specific deer that we're keying in on, and we're making I'm only going to get to hunt 2 days this week, so I'm moving both times. I'm not even hunting the same place because I don't want anything patterning me right now. I just trying something a little bit different. Where before I would be trying to do, feed tree stuff or whatever, and I've never had a whole lot of luck doing that out here. So now I'm just targeting a mature buck where I've learned over the last 3 or 4 years where he's at and just trying to catch him coming by what camera data I've had. So.
Yeah. Pike, what is your take on this time of year? Like, what would you need to see in order to feel confident?
I think I'm kind of the bridge between these two guys because I used to be like Shane. Shane's covered, probably like 75 miles now in 3 weeks. he said 65 this morning, but that's how I used to be. And I think especially early season, I place a lot of emphasis on the sign, especially that early season sign. You had a – who was the guy that you had on a couple of weeks ago that I messaged you about on my way back?
Rick Cope, the feed tree guy?
It was the feed tree guy.
Yeah, Rick Cope.
Because you always find those early season rubs mm-hmm. where those feed trees are. At least that's what I've always seen. Mm-hmm. So, but to find all of those, you have to do what he's doing, which is
cover a lot of ground. Yeah. Now, which he's learning that too, so which I already got kind of an idea on stuff that's historical.
That's why I said I'm the bridge between you guys because I'm not doing what he's doing right now because I've covered so many miles up here. So, I'm done with that. But if
it's
I happen to run,
I'm hot right now.
It is. But if I happen to run across a sign, then I mean it's there's going to be a pin.
What kind of sign would it have to be?
Rubs right now. Because, all of these bucks are still bachelored up, and they will be for probably another 2 weeks at least. at least according to my cameras last year, they were bachelored up till probably the second, third week of October, and then they totally dispersed, and then you're trying to catch your tail.
Yeah, if you can find over, you know, another, what I would hunt for a sign right now, if I find a scraped line close to some kind of, you know, bedding, I'm talking about like just a row of them just going, you know, you give that a couple of days, would be something I would spend some time on, because they only do that for a little bit. And then, like Pike said, when they bust up, all that changes. So, but yeah, that would be something. But as far as the rubs and stuff right there at the feeding, that's, you know, you've only got, I'd only try that a time or two, because they'll figure you out, I think. That's just my thoughts on that, because you're getting in there where they're going to spend some time at, and they can smell you somehow or another pretty quick, or see you or something. So.
Yeah, I think what we're doing is locating where that concentration is at, mm-hmm. and then kind of figuring out where are all the possibilities for bedding, and then basically hitting one, knocking it out, hitting another one, knocking it out, and just going through them, and eventually you're gonna get on them. Now this guy over here, I think he bays in Khmer deer, like, because I mean he just walks in the wood and he's like, I saw two bucks today, I saw three today. I mean, like,
I was
like,
walks on a 12 point.
I feel like, you know, like this didn't happen back where I came from. Like, that's what I was telling him. I'm like shocked, you know, because it's like there's a good buck, you know, hiding behind every tree. Not really. You know,
are you saying this is Illinois?
Yeah, no, way. It's not anywhere near close, but for me it feels that way. And I think it's just because you know, like, I'm following the sign, you know, like I've hit so many places already. It's like, if you hit so many places, you eventually, you know, hit something good, you know.
And
having intel from people that are here constantly has helped a lot. Yeah. So I won't take all the credit. I've got a lot of intel from other people for this area that's really helped me out a lot. And really what I'm doing right now is a little bit like Perry's doing too. Places I'm checking is historical. Like, I put cameras where there's no sign right now. Like, there's zero sign. But there was a scrape there last year, big rub line, scrape line in areas that I think will light up 3 or 4 weeks from now, you know. And that's, and once it starts, and those places like that, that's why you got to check, you know, it's a catch 22. You got to check those cameras often, because a lot of times it's that first little bit that it gets hit. You better be there then, because if you come back and check it 2 weeks later or a week later, it's dried up and you're out of they've moved on somewhere else, you know.
Well, and that's kind of a differing style between, say, Perry and Shane. Is, you know, Michael or Perry, you're really trying to, you soak your cameras and you're hunting this year what you learned last year in the last couple of years, versus necessarily trying to use camera data from this year to also hunt this year. Where Shane, you're trying to do it in a very short period of time, because you just moved up here.
Catch up.
To catch up. So, like, you're trying to be able to do that effectively. Yeah. And, you know, we learned, at least Shane, you probably learned that, you know, Pike's walked every square inch of this place.
I did. I looked. Yeah, it's like, did you go here? Have you been to this? You know, have you been to this ridge? Yeah, oh yeah. Like, 2 years ago, I went down there. I did this. It's like, it went in detail. It's like, I can't, you know, I can't go anywhere. So I'm having to, like, I'm going completely off the map to get away from him.
He's thrown about 50 locations at me, and I think there was only two that I haven't been to.
Yeah, there was only two. Yeah, wow. Yeah, there's only two. So yeah, it's
funny. The Dilla didn't do his job good enough. Right. Turned over every. Yeah. He got close.
Missed a couple.
Yeah, he missed a couple of them. But I'm sure now that I've been in there, at least he'll have a point of reference now, you know, to go cover them.
Now, Shane, I want to kind of get you to answer the same question I was asking both Perry and Pike, which is, what kind of sign would you have to find right now, or what kind of situation would you have to find to feel confident going in there that you might have an observation or get an opportunity potentially out of a mature buck this time of year?
It's just like what Perry said, is those scrapes together. That's what we hunted yesterday. It's just a bad wind, you know, like, but yeah, multiple scrapes that are being hot, heavily used right now. Like, I put a camera out on one of them the day before and had does coming into that scrape, using that scrape, peeing in that scrape. That told me that scrape's hot, you know, like, there's a reason they're doing that. So yeah, it's definitely that right now. I mean, I'm looking at the rubs, like, trying to get an idea of travel, like, direction. But the chances are, you know, right now those rubs are never going to be seen again. You know, now they may be another buck following along behind them. That's what will usually happen. is one buck will lay down a rub line, and there'll be another one that'll come behind him following up, just checking up on him. That's what I've seen, you know, back where I originally come from. And I think that's something that carries out no matter where you are, you know, this time of year.
Yeah.
Now, 2 weeks from now, they're going to be, you know.
It's going to shift.
Yeah. But.
Another thing, kind of like talking about like what you're looking for and like your finding scrapes that are, you know, does are using, bucks are using. What has been, and really, well, actually, I kind of go back to pike. You've had success killing a buck. At least I know of one buck, maybe some other deer, like kind of early season up here. What was the situations of like the success you've had, like early season bow hunting, like in this kind of like habitat?
I'm usually on them a lot better early season. Now I haven't been the past 2 days, but usually I have a lot better luck early season and late season, and I actually struggle up here a majority of the time during the rut, and I think that's because I'm not really putting as much of an emphasis on doe bedding and where the does are, though. To be honest, I don't even remember what the question was.
No. I mean, that just like what you've had success with early season. Like, I remember Bucky killed a couple of years ago. What was that scenario?
It was actually the same place we went to yesterday.
Okay.
And what's funny is the bucks are still in that area. Mm-hmm. When I got down there, so I actually walked that area. I don't want to give too much information, but it's
– You don't have to give this
it's,
certain terrain feature.
Yeah, it's thick cover. You know, you have these little flat tops, and then you've got bluffs and bluff gaps, which is
–
I mean, that's about everywhere up here. But anyways, but they came out of the thick stuff and fed on the white oaks right, you know, in the evening. And I actually went down there and hunted the same tree yesterday. I'm not 100% sure, but it sounded like they were doing the same thing they did the previous year or 2 years ago, 3 years ago, whenever it was. They milled around in there in that thicket and then were waiting to come out. I heard something in there yesterday, but never did lay eyes on it or anything. Never, you know, nothing ever came out. We did have a doe blowing in between us yesterday, though, so that could have spooked them enough to where, you know, they didn't want to come out before dark. If that wasn't the case, the couple of trees where I actually shot the buck, those actually weren't dropping this year, which I was actually surprised because it seems like every white oak up here is dropping right now. But there were a few behind me, so, I mean, I still feel like something should have come out, but that's you know, when I've been successful, it's been that early season on white oaks or something like that, some kind of, you know, feature.
Gotcha. Also, so another question, this is for everybody, and Shane, we talked about this a little bit last night, but how to go about trying to be quiet getting in, like, a stand out here? Because I came up here thinking, like, you know, it's not going to be that bad. It is. There's so much leaf litter and sticks. It is nearly impossible to, like, move through here. And I mean, first, I mean, actually, I'll kick it over to Perry. What is your take on that? Like, just making noise, getting into a stand, into a spot, especially if you're trying to get tight to bedding like you're talking about doing now?
Well, I don't try to crunch a bunch of sticks. But as far as the leaves stuff, I don't really worry about that because you got pigs, armadillo, and all other stuff. They'll make as much or more noise than you. Just an unusual noise I don't want to make. That's the last thing in my mind about making noise walking in or stuff. Because, like you say, right now it's so dry and leaves piled everywhere. You can't, I mean, you'd probably hurt yourself trying to be that quiet, so I don't worry about it. It just took me a few years, but I don't even worry about it no more because them dang pigs, you can hear them suckers coming forever, and it sounds like elephants coming through the woods, you know, and deer are used to that now, so armadillo is the same way, so I don't worry about it. So just don't want to make any kind of metal noise or anything unusual.
Shane, what about you?
Same thing. I mean, I said that last night. I think the buck that I jumped that day before was coming down there to check on the noise I was making, you know, walking through the woods. I think he was actually coming to investigate that. So I you know, as long as you're not banging, like you said, metal or something like that, I'm trying not to break limbs either, trying to, you know, but I think sounding like something moving through the woods probably benefits you more than hurts you a lot of times, you know.
Yeah.
It's natural curiosity, mm-hmm. You know.
Yeah, see, I thought that was going to happen to me today after I bumped that buck next to the scrapes, and
after I moved past him, after he ran off, I kept moving side hill along that ridge, and I heard like a bunch of rustling. And I'm like, it was too shuffly. I'm like, that's not a deer. And it turned out it was a sounder of pigs that was coming through, and you know, got about 20 yards from them and could not shoot one of them, unfortunately, too thick. But you're right. Like, this is the first time I've hunted around like pigs, and it's just, they are so loud. Like, I mean, you could hear them from 100 yards off easily. And like they're raking trees. And I'm curious. I mean, Perry, have you seen them like negatively affect like deer in bedding areas? If pigs move in, will it push those deer out, or do the deer just kind of like chill out?
I don't think so. I've seen where a big mature boars bed in the same general area as big bucks. Now they just something about their gene or whatever. That's where they're gonna bed. So deer now have got, you know, when they first started getting spread here, you know, deer were nervous about them, but they didn't get so used to them. Now they're raised up with them now, so they kind of use each other a little bit, I think. So. But it's cool though. But I've had cameras running out here for crap, I don't know, over 10 years now, year round. And them big old boars, you know, you'll see them coming off the same specific spot that a buck would. You know, it's wild. So, but I don't know. It's just part of it, and you just don't even worry about it now. So.
Yeah. See, that's what I was curious with, because I got in that spot and found that buck sign, and there was a big, I took a photo of it, big track in one of those scrapes right there below where I bumped that buck. And again, those pigs from that general area weren't 150 yards from there,
right?
And I was just like, but they're, you know, it seemed like the pigs were all eating, they were scrounging up all kinds of stuff, but it seemed like they were feeding more on the mountain oaks.
Really?
We're like,
oh, good, because you know, yeah, they don't like them good,
but yeah, absolutely. But it's like,
there's plenty of them things,
yeah, there's plenty of them, but it's like, you know, it's, I felt like because they were kind of on the mountain oaks and the deer were more on the white oaks, it's like they're kind of separated a little bit and they're not necessarily right on top of each other. So I thought that was kind of fascinating just with how everything kind of played out. But also, like, with this time of the year, how important for you guys is, like, a change in the weather, like a cold front, wind shift, all that kind of stuff? I mean, Pike, what's your thoughts on that?
I mean, yeah. I mean, I think you ask any hunter and they're going to say they'll take a cold front any day. Rain. Either one of those. Yeah, this 90 – degree heat, I mean, it's for the birds, it's not for the deer or me.
That's rough on us, ain't it?
Yeah.
Now what about also like wind shifts? I mean, if you had like a couple days where it's like south winds and maybe a cool front or a cold front to push through, but you had like just a wind shift, do you think that does anything for like overall deer movement?
I don't know. I mean, I'm sure it does. I can tell you this, we've got one spot over here, and I was actually going to bring it up years ago when me and Parker used to do his podcast. We had this buck called the Babe Ruth buck, and you know, I've told you about it, Mr. Perry, but he always came through, and I actually called when I could kill this deer the following year because I'd let that camera sit all year. He was so consistent. He only came through this one spot with a southeast wind between 10 and 12 o'clock in the morning, and every single time. And I had him on camera probably like, I don't know, like four times, six times, something like that. And I didn't figure it out until just a minute ago, actually. We were talking about these scrapes, and where they're located at was under white oaks. There were white oaks dropping that year, and that's when those does were feeding through there, and that's the reason why he was laying down all those scrapes right there. The following year, those white oaks weren't dropping, so that's the reason why he wasn't coming through here. But sitting here thinking about, you know, the wind, I mean, that's the only wind, you know, that he would come through that, you know, area was with a southeast wind. So, I mean, if you've got a specific wind, some of these deer might have a certain path of travel or a certain bedding location or feeding location that they're going to use based on that.
Yeah, Perry, what's your take on, you know, early season wind shifts and also like just different fronts pushing through, whether it's rain, whether it's a cold front, even a warm front? I mean, what's your take on that? Like, what kind of, I mean, of course, get you excited. Of course, cold fronts get you excited, but is there anything you've learned through like the historical sign that, like, you know, if wind shifts or even fronts push through, any kind of, you know, spike in movement?
The front stuff, you know, everybody loves, and I really love, you know, because right before the front, when it's changing and all that, there seems to be more activity, and then right after it, you know, it seems to be more for me, so I prefer a front of any kind, really, in any kind of rain situation. So all that's good to me versus these days like we got right now, just stale days basically. So, and I think that thermal stuff is worse right now to me, you know, just the way it is, because it's stale, it's just so stale out. So, but other than that, I wish I'm like next weekend. I wish I was this weekend. So, but yeah.
Yeah, no. We'll kill one for you. Okay.
Yeah,
send me a picture.
You need killing this afternoon. We'll have the whole posse come and get it out. So, but Shane, I mean, what is your take on, again, wind switches, fronts, different fronts, and everything for like early season movement, and especially maybe what you've seen other part of Alabama where you ran trail cameras. You know, how are you going to apply what you've learned there over here?
Yeah, I mean, because I've had so many years of doing it with those weather stations. And then trying to, you know, track what they're doing. It's definitely like Michael Pike just mentioned, it's the wind shift seems to get them going in certain areas. Like certain areas will light up with a certain wind shift. You know, like let's say it goes from the north, you have a southwest wind, it switches to an east wind or something like that. They may use this ridge more because it's more advantageous for them to travel between a bedding area and a feeding area with that wind. So they move, you know, so you can, if you have those kind of switches early, you can, you know, I think you can take advantage of them, but it's definitely that cool front. I mean, any kind of front really, like Perry said, is going to be good. But yeah, you've got to key on those, especially now once we get four or five fronts that have kind of moved through, they don't have as much of effect, but those first two or three, it's like you need to be in the woods those days because you're missing out, you know, the day before, the day of, like let's say it's going to come in at 4 p.m. on a Thursday, you know, you need to be there Thursday, you know, and you definitely need to be there, you know, that afternoon and the following day, you know, if you can.
When you think turkey calls, think of Houndstooth. Houndstooth Game Calls is a company based right here in Alabama, actually based out of Tuscaloosa, and they have been making some of our favorite turkey calls since 2012. Y'all head on over to their website, see what they got. They got a little something for everybody. They have a huge selection of different mouth calls, different cuts, different reed configurations. I like to go on there and get five or six different mouth calls and just run them, see which ones I like the most. You know, some days I might like the KB Hen, some days I might like the Ghost Cut. Some situations I might like the Country Girl call, you know, that I can cut on really hard, where on other situations I might like the All Pro that I can get a little bit softer on. Bottom line, there's something for everybody and something for every situation. And hey, you can get 15% off of your order at Houndstooth Game Calls by using the promo code SOP24. That's SOP24. Use that promo code. It'll get you a discount and it helps out the podcast.
Man, Mark's Outdoors is your one-stop shop for everything outdoor and shooting related. They're a family-owned business that's been around for over 40 years now, been serving the Birmingham area, but now they have opened their doors to everyone across the United States through their online store. Again, me and Andrew have been using Mark's Outdoors for years now. They have unbelievable supplies of literally anything that we need we can pick up from Mark's Outdoors. They're even carrying different saddle companies, sticks, platforms, the whole nine yards at Mark's Outdoors. And again, if you don't live in Alabama and you don't want to make the drive to Birmingham, you can go over to their website, marksoutdoors.com, and actually shop on their online store to get awesome deals on different products that you may be needing right now and be able to get to you in a very timely manner as well. So give Mark's Outdoors a try. We promise you, you'll enjoy them. They have unbelievable customer service and some of the best guys in the industry. TruLock Chokes has been made in Georgia since 1981 and offering a wide range of chokes, over 2,000 different chokes for all kinds of shooting activities. You might be wondering why you'd want to purchase a TruLock choke, and it's to improve your shotgun performance. Absolutely guaranteed. And as a great example, we have Andrew Maxwell here. And Andrew, you've had some pretty good luck, again, kind of switching out chokes and trying out the Precision Hunter choke from TruLock. So, Andrew, what's been your experience so far?
Yeah, I've used the same choke for several years now. I never really thought much of it, and I got the TruLock choke in. I patterned my gun with the first choke at 30 and 50, and then I switched to the TruLock and changed from 30 to 50. And the 50-yard pattern on my gun with the TruLock choke is unbelievable. Like, everybody's jaws were dropping. Like, when we were out there with Mike and Sam, we were all super impressed. I mean, it's throwing a better pattern at 50 now than it was throwing at 40 before my old choke.
And Andrew, you're shooting the Precision Hunter choke from TruLock. It's a great option. Same chokes I have in my shotgun. So guys, if you want to give TruLock a shot this spring, you can head over to TruLockChokes.com. That's TruLockChokes.com. You can also use the promo code Southern at checkout at TruLockChokes.com and save 10% on your order. Again, give TruLock a shot this spring, especially if you're not happy with the performance of your shotgun, and shoot with a more deadly pattern with TruLock.
I'll say this too, like one of my most successful days as far as the wind is when you have that front moving through, I'd say maybe like a day or two later. So you're going to have those really high winds, but that first calmer day, that's that bluebird sky, especially if it's cold in the morning, those deer will be out there. Especially in the cutover.
Yeah, it's that wind suppressed day when the wind finally dies down and it kind of reverses a little bit. Usually you'll get that. That's what he's talking about, I think. It's like you get a northwest wind, it brings that front through, and it comes through, and the next day is windy as heck. And then that next day, you kind of get that south wind. It kind of warms up just a little bit. Yeah. And there's no wind that day, and those are the days that just light up.
Yeah, see, this is – stuff like this is what kind of gets me excited about bow hunting, especially in the southeast. Is like, you know, everybody here, I think, had – like, this. My thought, I haven't been up here in 9 years. It's been 9 years since I've stepped foot on this property. And anyways, gotten some deer yesterday and found some other deer today. But it's like it's what's exciting, I feel like, is the opportunity this early season – when you find that sign, you know it's happened extremely recently. It's not like when you get to like closer to the rut, it's like, okay, you're finding rubs, but that rub's probably from 3-4 weeks ago potentially at that point. Or scrapes, you know, it's maybe been hit or miss. Like it was opened, but maybe they're not necessarily using it now. It's like if you find some of that sign now, like you know, and like pair, like you said, you find a hot scrape line right now, that deer is using it right now, and like you have a very short window of time to be able to capitalize on it versus if you were to wait closer to the rut when now they're focused solely on the does and not necessarily worried about, you know, refreshing up sign a whole bunch or anything else like that. So that's what gets me excited. And again, typically in other parts of Alabama that we hunt in, you don't see none of this. Dude, you'd be lucky. I mean, you find some rubs, but like you ain't going to find a scrape opened up. You're not going to find – you'll find licking branches and old scrapes, and you might put a trail camera on and have a buck work a licking branch, but he's not working the ground at all. But it's like out here, it's like some of these scrapes I saw, you can see them from 50 yards away in those leaves. Just everything's plowed up and moved over, and you're like, okay, it's fascinating when you're able to have that kind of opportunity this early in the season and kind of roll with it. But what are some takeaways that y'all are having or like processing that you're learning now that potentially would apply during the rut? Or is what you're learning now has nothing to do with when it comes to the rut? Will like the game completely shift and your mindset completely shift? Perry, what's your take?
This is going back for about 3 years now. You know, people are starting to, from Facebook, social media, whatever, seeing the quality of deers that are starting to get took. So them deer, a lot of people, younger guys especially, you know, the older guys were kind of already, they're passing up more younger bucks. So you seen the 2 years ago, there was several whoppers killed, and pretty much they had a high rate of mature bucks killed, and so people was passing a lot of younger bucks. Last season, wasn't a whole lot of bucks killed, period, really. A big drop because it took a lot of people time to adjust to find a deer. By then it was pretty much too late that, you know, so there wasn't that many kills. So now you're seeing all this sign. It's getting me kind of thinking, man, it could be crazy because more deer survived. People are passing more. The competition is going to be there. So it could be something else. And that's kind of got me, you know, fired up and waiting for to see something crazy huge, you know, but we'll see. But this place has got the potential for it. And I'm, you know, it makes you feel good that people are starting to pass more. You know, I don't have anything against anybody shooting anything, but, you know, used to everybody would just, whatever, they're just shooting a buck because they didn't really know. They just knew bucks were here, they could kill them. But now they're seeing the potential. Hey, I'm going to wait on one that's, you know, bigger. And so that allows more to grow and more to get huge. So
I can tell you that I've passed a few, but the only reason was because I didn't want to drag them up out of the bottom or a couple of miles back to a road or something like that.
Well, you ain't passing no 140s or nothing, are you?
No. Okay. No, I'm just missing those.
So you drop me a pin.
I'm just missing those every year.
But Pike, kind of goes back over to you. You know, Perry just kind of got his talk or thought on, like, especially with the lack of bucks being killed this year, now you have, you know, probably even a better age structure this year. You know, those 3-year-olds, 4-year-olds last year didn't get killed, so now you get, you know, those 4 or 5-year-olds out there and probably plenty of them. Is there anything that you're able to focus on now that you're, like, paying attention to now that would apply during the rut, or is your mindset completely going to shift and you're going to completely do a 180?
Yeah, I'm going to do a 180. Yeah.
And how so? Like, how's?
Just because right now it's this early season sign and feed trees and it – during the rut up here, I mean, I think you just really got to find out where the doe's at and you know, find some kind of funnel or pinch point, something to bring them through an area.
So, but I guess that's something you can learn in the early season is if you start having encounters with does or have them on trail camera, take a note of that.
That's true. But the cover does, it changes a lot up here. So, I mean, they are going to shift around a little bit, and you're going to have to relocate them. But, I mean, it's not going to – if you know pretty close to where they're at, you'll be able to get on them again real quick, at least the does.
Yeah. A lot of those are still, you know, got their fawns are raising up, and they're still liking their – where they had their babies at. So they're still in them kind of them little areas. And a little bit later on, they'll start moving closer together with other does or other family groups. So you can kind of – you'll have to adjust to that. So.
Now, Shane, this being your first year up here, really, you know, putting in a lot of time – what are you trying to learn now that would apply come the rut, pre-rut time frame?
Well, it's just like what I told Michael Pike just a minute ago. I put a camera in an area, and in the last, since September the 15th, there's been a group of does on that camera every day. And so that tells me, and it's a large group. It's like seven or eight does with fawns that have aged out, so – they're back together now, and this just happened in the last 2 weeks. Prior to that, they were just one or two spotty ones, you know. So I think they moved into their area right now that they're probably going to be in, during the, you know,
for
duration,
a while. Yeah.
You know. So it's things like that that I'm, you know, and you stack a few of those locations on top of each other, and you got something to hunt off of.
See, especially in an area like this that has – you know, such low deer numbers, I almost would feel bad now to shoot a doe. Like, I really want to shoot a doe, but I'm like, that's my bait come, you know, mid-November. Yeah. And I'm like, you know, do y'all want
it? Hurts me to shoot. I haven't shot a doe in, I don't know, probably 10 years. Yeah.
Well, see, I don't know if you heard what happened to me. I lost all my deer meat, everything.
Well, somebody was telling me that.
Through 4 50-gallon bags, trash bags full of meat out of the freezer because the freezer went out. Mm. I didn't know about for like 5 days. Mm. So, I'm on a mission. Definitely, you know, we have some really good hunts in Alabama this year, so I'm trying to be picky on bucks. Was like any opportunity I get a doe, I want to, you know, potentially get a couple this year early. But again, in an area like this, it's almost like just taking tabs and notes. Like where I was yesterday, I saw, I don't know if it was a doe or a buck, I couldn't tell, but a deer was coming down the side of the ridge and kind of skirted me going out towards some other bluffs. But, you know, trying to pay attention, like where you're finding the doe is at now. And like Pike, like you said, when the leaves drop, the leaf cover drops, you know, what's the next best cover? I'll be honest, where I've been at, I haven't found a whole bunch of mountain laurel. There's a little bit, but not much enough, I'd feel like, the whole deer. So I'm like, you know, if there's deer there and all those leaves come off, I'm like, they're probably going to be high-tailing to, you know, next best thing.
I think the mountain laurel is mostly the bucks. I don't think the does are bedding in the mountain laurel.
Okay.
Some of the pigs. Yeah.
And, I mean, they can really bed in a lot of different places. It doesn't have to be extremely thick, but I do think that they do shift just a little bit. Just because some of these areas get wide open. I mean, it looks thick right now, but it's you'll be able to see 300, 400 yards out through there here in about another month. Yeah. So.
Yeah, and I'm used to that. Like, you know, the area that I'm coming from is, you know, your thick areas are limited to like little 20-acre blocks, and that's it. And then you got like 700 acres of just vast open hardwoods, you know, so. You know, here it's not much different, you know.
If you're wanting to kill a doe, what I would do is go on the outer edge, like National Forest near private, because your deer numbers and especially your doe numbers, I mean, they're through the roof. But it's a lot different up here. I think the terrain makes it hard on them.
Yeah. Also, another thing about, like, this area, but also, like, this time of the year and taking information from this, I feel like, especially for like a guy like Shane, which Shane, you've covered a ton of miles already, but it's like if you're say you moved, a guy maybe got a different job, you moved to a different place, or you started hunting public, or you got in a new hunting lease, the more time you can spend boots on the ground, the more you're going to learn before the rut actually gets here. Like, don't wait to go scout until right before the rut, because you're going to start with a blank slate and you have no idea what you're doing if you don't have history with a property.
Yeah, you got to put boots on the ground. I mean, I'm playing catch up like big time, but. You know, if you just wait, you're just going to be chasing, you know. So you got to – it's a give and take. I'm giving up hunting, sitting in a stand right now to scout, you know, which I don't feel like I'm really giving up much because it is so it's so hit or miss this early. I mean, you're basically, you know, banking on a buck, making a poor decision, you know. And sometimes they do, but I'm just feeling like my best opportunity is going to be a few weeks from now, you know, because I'm going to have more of a bank of knowledge by then.
Absolutely.
I do think they're a little bit more at ease right now, though.
Yeah, oh, definitely.
In a few weeks, especially when they split up, it's –
Well, if you were walking like you used to and like he is, another 3 days, they'd be all be nocturnal. Yeah.
So that's why I'm trying to just bounce around like.
Yeah, I know.
I was mid-sip. Oh, man, that was dangerous.
It's just like we talked about last night. Like, I guarantee you where we're seeing those deer is because they're hearing that gravel popping. Mm-hmm. And they're staying in areas where, okay, I may be exposed a little bit. But I can see what's coming, you know, and I can get back in the cover real quick.
Yeah, right.
You know.
I'm very curious about getting all y'all's takes because, Shane, you've got experience with this in a different part of the state, but both Pike and Perry, how much do you think bucks right now, if you found like where a buck was bedded at, how much of it you think is sight advantage here versus like hearing or smelling advantage at this time of the season compared to later?
I don't think it's sight right now just because of how much cover's – I think you're probably more smell and hearing, but like Shane said, probably more hearing than anything. A lot of these deer seem to be bedded really close to roads, and I think that you know, just like this main highway that's running down through here. I mean, you see a lot of people parked off of it, and there's a reason why. It's because everybody driving up and down through here is seeing, you know, a deer cross one of these spots, and that's, you know, what they're doing is going and hunting a deer that they've probably seen cross the road or heard about crossing the road. So I think, you know, and I mean, you gotta think a lot of places down through here, I mean, there's not a pull off but ever so often. So I mean, if these deer get in between some of those pull offs and all they've got to do is hop out in the evenings right after dark, and I mean, they're feeding on the grasses or, you know, acorns pretty close. And I've always thought that there was something about the light too, like especially around some of these houses, especially like, you know, these major roads, they always seem to be pretty close to them, especially after dark. And I don't know if it's, you know, like a predator type thing, like they don't, you know, if they get close to them, then they don't have to worry about maybe as many, you know, predators or something. I don't really know, but I think if you just went a little ways off the road right now, anywhere down through here, that you'd probably find a whole group of deer. So
yeah, I mean, Shane, is your thoughts kind of similar again, just when it came to bedding right now? It's probably more so off just, you know, hearing it and smelling advantage, not necessarily visual right now.
Yeah, I mean, because you can't, I mean, you know, you think about it from our perspective, it looks thick. Think about looking at it from a deer's perspective that's, you know, 3 foot shorter than we are. Imagine how thick it looks to them, you know. So I think they're seeking out places that they can have a visual advantage at some point in time. Like, okay, if the wind isn't right and I can't bed in this position, I want to be somewhere where I can see. But I think more often than not, it's just, you know, using that thermal switch with their nose to bed right now, you know.
By the way, speaking about bedding, what have you learned about bucks bedding around those bluffs after being up here?
I don't know if I want to tell that.
I think I already told it in the podcast.
It's may been
have
already told before, it. But yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you want to give away the
secret sauce?
Yeah.
No, we can say it.
Yeah. I don't
know. That's limited. Kind of is going to be limited for early part, some of that stuff.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you one thing. I crossed through some of those bluffs today. It's crazy how the difference between thickness of cover from down low is to up top. Like, Shane, you were talking about that, I think, last night, because I haven't been down low in any parts, and I went down low today on a shortcut, which actually did end up as a shortcut. I thought I was going to be stuck where I went down. But it's so wide open. It literally looks like a park down there.
I told you.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. I got down there. I was like, oh, crap. I started looking. I'm like, can I get back out of this thing? But it's just – it's so opposite. Like, I would think some of these, you know, some of these, you know, ridge tops would be thick. I mean, might be more open than some of the bottoms, but it's like the bottoms are so wide. At least the one I went into today was so wide open. It's like I can't imagine a deer necessarily going down there maybe during this time of year, maybe during the rut, going from one ridge line to another ridge line. But it's just, it's interesting kind of seeing like the difference. And it's kind of like what Josh Drivers talked about in the podcast before about like negative terrain. You get down there was zero deer sign. At least where I was, there was no deer, pig sign, but no deer sign. And I'm like, okay, well, check that off the box. Right. I ain't got to worry about that right now. So, also, another thing is, like, what?
No.
Children.
I don't think you understand the secret sauce.
The secret sauce. I don't understand the secret sauce. That's why I'm asking.
Yeah. I told him about the secret sauce, and he didn't believe me either until he saw it.
Oh, that's it. Okay, I know what you're talking about now. Well, so, also, what – Pike, what trail cameras are you running out here? What do you have trail cameras focused on right now?
Oh god. I mean, I just went and threw like four of them up the other day, but they're all easily accessible. We'll just put it that way.
But what I'm saying is
they're on Featuries.
It's on, okay. Yeah. As with Featuries, buck sign, you know, trail corridor, stuff like that.
No buck sign because I mean last Tuesday was my first day up here, so I mean I hadn't set foot, you know, in the woods. So, but I wanted to get them out at least to see if something popped up. And I mean, of course, something did pop up. But,
well, speak about that. We were just talking. We were talking about before we started recording. So the spot I went and walked this morning, come to find it, like where I found, I think it was a total of 7 scrapes in there, jumped that buck and everything else. And you had been in there. How long ago was it? Did you say 10 days? Was it when we first got up here? You went up there like a week ago.
Last. When did we scout?
We scouted on Wednesday.
It was Tuesday.
Okay. So we crossed paths. Like, my track and your track crossed paths. And I was asking you if you had seen any scrapes when you were in there. Like, no. So, like, those scrapes are, you know, well within, you know, the last 6-7 days maybe.
Which goes along with that full moon theory.
We're about to open up a can of worms now.
No, let's don't.
You and the full moon theory?
Anytime we talk about the moon on this podcast, we'll get 15 or 20 comments like, there's no evidence. I'm like, listen, I didn't say there's evidence.
It's love or hate.
It's a lot of hate, too. God, man. Some of those deer studies.
I mean, you can make it fit.
Here comes the can of worms.
You can make it fit your narrative. Yep. And I've just made it fit my narrative. But I like my narrative, so we'll just stick with that. Y'all can have y'all's song.
Yeah. No, the well, also, real quick, as a point of kind of getting to a point of wrapping up, what is kind of for the next week? I know, Perry, you got work and everything going on, so I'll leave you out of this one. But for, like, Shane, what is your thought process and goal for the next week as we start getting a cold front push through and everything else? Is there anything else that you're trying to fine-tune or pinpoint before that cold front gets here so you have some spots that you really have keyed in on?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm definitely have. We've located a few bucks, I'd say that. So right now I'm going to use the next couple of days when it's hot and really focus on where I think they'll be once that cold front kicks off, you know, cause that's definitely going to put a lot of fire under them if they hadn't already, you know, like we're seeing sign now and it's dictated like by something, you know, which is that testosterone ramp up, which I think is what's happened right now. But what is that cold front going to do? Because now you got once we get the three-year-old bucks, which I think will happen in the next week or two, when we get them on the same testosterone level as those 4.5, 5.5, 6.5, 7.5-year-old bucks, that's when everything's going to change. So I'm trying to predict where are those older age class bucks going to kind of get away from those younger bucks and start establishing their territory, because that's what you're chasing right now, and that's what I've chased no matter where I'm. That's just something I've learned, that once those younger deer get their testosterone level up, where they're challenging a little bit on those older bucks want to get away and they want to establish their own little area.
Do you think those mature bucks get a little more active at that point when they know there's more competition?
Yeah, there's more competition. Yeah, yeah. It's like I gotta really ramp up my game, you know. So I think with the hard mast that's out here, that's probably going to be, you know, this is probably a microcosm for most all of the South, because I think we've all kind of had similar weather patterns right now. I think this could be across the board. You're probably looking at a really hard mast crop and you're probably going to have a ramped up, you know, rut season. That's what I say. That's what I'm thinking.
I agree. I think you're going to have a longer one too. I wouldn't be surprised if this next weekend, if somebody doesn't see something being chased. Like, and I know it's early, but I would not. Well, I would not put it past them.
I mean, it's just like those does on that camera last night. They're not peeing in that scrape this time of year for no reason. You know, you're not coming back to it every time hitting that licking branch that buck laid down.
I don't even think you mentioned that, did you?
No,
about them actually peeing in it?
Yeah, peeing
he mentioned it.
Yeah.
But, but that's fascinating, though. It's like you're actually seeing that. I mean, that's just one more reason, because I've gone back and forth the whole trail camera stuff, just mostly from like an application of like consistently keeping up with all your cameras. But it's like you can learn so much about like the timing of the rut and when some sign gets hot and then it kind of dies back off, and you can kind of figure out when that chasing is really taking place. And I know, Perry, that's a big thing for you, especially, you know, different trail camera locations, where you find that historical sign of when those chasing days really start happening and those bucks really start cruising. But it's I'd be fascinated, Shane, especially how many cameras you like to run and everything. After this year, if you start maybe finding different doe groups that are coming into heat a little bit earlier than others, and figuring out like where is those spots to really focus on for next year based off the data you get from this year.
You know, you want to know something I'd be interested in? I really want to know, just sitting here talking about it, the years when you have all of this mass and you got the white oaks dropping early, if those years these deer don't actually come in earlier.
Because they're healthier, better.
Yeah,
it may be more of an effect the next year. You know, it may affect the following year.
Yeah,
you
the know, body but, condition.
You know, the body condition is better the next year because they've had more. You know, I think that's got a lot more to do with it. You know, other than this year, it's just I think what it is right now too with all this hard mass is that's a calorie dump that they're able to get. So that calorie dump is like, oh, I got tons of calories right now. I don't really have to conserve. So I think your movement is ramped up. Whereas when you don't have it, it's a calorie conservation. Like I don't have this calorie that's available to me, so I've really got to conserve my energy, and I'm not going to move very much.
What about the does? Why do you think they're going ahead and peeing in the scrapes already?
I think that testosterone that they're sensing in the bucks is probably just getting them the same way, you know. And it's the same thing like I saw on those does that have been coming to that one in that one little drainage every day is a weird mix, like if you looked at it, because one of the does had a fawn with her that clearly was early, and one of them had a fawn with her that was clearly late, like she still had spots on her.
We pulled that camera, I believe, what was it? Was it March 28th? There was still a
still a
buck chasing a doe through.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's kind of odd.
Well, and I told you last year that I thought it was late, and I wasn't seeing, you know, sign being dropped down like the year before. And I mean that you know, those years when you don't have that and there is more stress, then I mean it may push them back.
Yeah,
just like it could push them forward.
I'd almost bet that they've done some study on that when it comes to stress on lack of food quality on does and what that actually does for them when it actually come for them, like being coming to heat earlier, later, on time, you know, of course like a delayed heat cycle, and how that would affect, because that is interesting, Shane, like you were saying. And you know, also, you know, this is the year someone ought to kill some huge body weight deer as well, just because the amount of mass crops are out.
Yeah. Plus, we had a lot of rain in February, March, April. I mean, we had no – most of the South had ample rain during that period of time. There's a few areas in the South Alabama and South Georgia that's been dealing with drought lately, but most everything in that February, March, April, May. So we had a lot of lush crops, a lot of lush vegetation. All the forbs and all that were high, and – The tannin value is waited really late in the year to creep up, so they've been able to eat all this green stuff much later, so I think it's going to make a big difference.
The only thing I might be concerned about a little bit is last year's winter, how low their bodies went or what condition they was in, and if they actually had to get it built back up. If it affected any rack development or anything on the monster ones. So, but that'd be the only concern I have. But like you say, we've been – since, I guess, late February, rain and stuff, everything greened up pretty quick, fast. So maybe they'll maybe they've got back to real big racks with those.
Yeah. We had a bad December last year.
Yeah.
But, you know, luckily January and February weren't that, you know, wasn't really that bad. So maybe they had enough time to bounce back in that period of time, you know. So.
Fascinating. Well, guys, appreciate y'all joining us. Listeners, appreciate y'all listening to the podcast. Viewers, appreciate y'all watching the podcast. Anybody got any final tips or anything y'all want to give anybody going out this bow season? If season hasn't opened for them yet, or they're just now getting ready to go out?
What was that Big Buck Nuts comment?
Which comment?
I don't know the last one. Something about crossing the road or something like that.
Crossing the road.
Oh, don't worry about it.
Oh, you're talking about the review he left, or did you have a text message?
No, the review.
Yeah, something about, you know, catch him slipping across the road, you know, you ain't going to get him killed or whatever. Definitely seems like, you know, you drive some roads out, you know, here or any other piece of public, you're going to see deer at some point.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, that's a lot of people do that. They drive right, you know, right at daylight around when it's getting dark, you know, rut time gets close, people be driving all the time. Some of them don't even sleep. You've got to be driving 2 weeks trying to find out where they're crossing that.
So. Yeah. Never try to do that.
If I was a Big Buck Nuts, I'd watch out for this guy right here.
Oh, Shane.
Because he's going to see you. He is going to see you, and you're going to have a pin.
Awesome, awesome. Well, guys, appreciate y'all joining, and hey, now we got to go hunt this afternoon. Go get some deer kill.
Go sweat and then hunt.
Yeah.
Awesome. Appreciate y'all listening. Appreciate y'all watching. If y'all enjoyed the podcast, share it with some buddies. Share it with some friends. Go leave us a 5-star written review on Apple Podcasts, and we'll catch you back here for the next episode of the Southern Outdoorsman Podcast. Y'all stay southern.
Look, last summer, y'all heard us talk a bunch about the Mobile Hunters Expo. It was an incredible event. A bunch of you guys came out to meet us. We got to talk to I don't even know how many listeners. If you heard all that last year and you're like, dang, that sounded cool. I should have went to that. Here's your chance. You need to make it to this one. It's June 28th through June 30th in Dalton, Georgia. All right, giving you a heads up here, so go ahead and mark it on your calendar. June 28th through June 30th, Dalton, Georgia is going to be the 2024 Mobile Hunters Expo. We're going to be there. A bunch of our past podcast guests are going to be there. There's going to be seminars. All of the mobile hunting companies are going to be there for you to try out gear before you buy it. It's like the one event of the year where all of the mobile hunter ecosystem just kind of congregates in one place. And Chris and Josh and the guys have done an absolutely phenomenal job putting this thing together over the last couple years. And it keeps getting better every year. So like I said, make sure you come see us. We're going to have a gigantic stack of free stickers to give away to every listener that stops by the booth. And we're going to have merch there to purchase. We're going to be recording podcasts, shooting videos, all kinds of stuff. So like I said, don't miss it. You can head on over to themobilehuntersexpo.com to look at show schedules and dates and go ahead and grab your tickets. So y'all go check it out at themobilehuntersexpo.com.